Can niacin really kill you? New studies show that 25 milligrams of niacin can cause heart disease. I take 300 milligrams a day, and here's why I'm not worried.
Welcome to the Joe Cohen Show. Join me as I share my experience with biohacking and invite top health experts to explore the latest technology, supplements, research, and resources for optimizing your body and brain.
So here's why I don't agree with the study in a fundamental way. So with every supplement or with every food, I haven't found a single thing, any recommendation, exercise is bad and is good, right? But the reason why exercise is so healthy is because the good outweighs the bad. So I could think of, you know, a bunch of things. Actually, a bunch of my labs got worse after exercise, yet exercise is still super healthy because it does all these good things as well. So you want to compare the good and the bad. And with everything, I can find one thing that's bad about it. And with niacin, actually, I can find 5, 10 things bad about it. And the idea is that even if there's 10 things, you still want to compare it to all the good things. And niacin has many, 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 many good things. So we need to think about it in terms of pros and cons. And this new study does show an additional con, likely, right? And we want more research. We want other researchers looking at it. But the bottom line is that this is a con of niacin, likely. And we need to take this into account when we're thinking about the pros as well. But let's look at this con exactly. Why is niacin bad? So niacin increases these two proteins, 2PY and 4PY. It doesn't make a difference what they are exactly, but these are metabolites. These are breakdown products of niacin. And when you take niacin, it does increase the breakdown to these products through niacinamide, by the way. So niacinamide would actually be worse. But essentially, you have these 2PY and 4PY. And what this does is it increases another protein called VCAM1, vascular endothelial adhesion molecule 1, which is found in the endothelium or the blood vessels. And basically, it attracts these white blood cells to the blood vessels. And the white blood cells in these blood vessels, right, there's a reason why it's attracting it. It's either for an infection or to do some kind of repair. But the more white blood cells you have in these endothelium, the more heart disease, the more the arteries harden. And over time, it causes a lot of damage. And that's what heart disease comes from. Now, many, many molecules, natural substances, drugs, and lifestyle approaches, diet, pretty much most things you could think about that are good for you are going to inhibit this VCAM1. So it's one of those things that the more healthy things you do, the more you're going to inhibit this VCAM1. And I think that, yes, let's say niacin could increase this VCAM1 temporarily. You could be doing a lot of things that inhibit it as well. And so I think that it's not a huge problem. Because if you are doing a whole bunch of other things, then it's probably going to counteract that effect. Now, they also didn't mention the dosage or the length of time or any of the specifics, right? So they're looking at these molecules. How do I know that, you know, one dosage is going to be worse than another dosage? It could be that any dosage of niacin kind of increases this protein. I don't know the exact details here, but essentially, I'm not too worried about this because there's many, many things that counteract this pathway. Now, there's one very important factor to realize. When you want to look at all the pros and cons for something, you want to look at something called all-cause mortality. So they have data because niacin was a drug that was used to lower cholesterol already in the 1950s. So they have a lot of data spanning over a lot of time of what happens when people take very high dose niacin. Now, it only reduces LDL cholesterol when you take very high doses of niacin. We're talking about over 500 milligrams, and it's also dose dependent. So they were usually giving people around 2,500 milligrams of niacin a day. Now, what we're talking about in this study, the researcher was saying that even 25 milligrams can be problematic, which is only 1% of this 2,500 milligrams that people were taking. Now, it's not clear that you want to extrapolate that 25 milligrams is not good, right? The question is exactly what point it's not good. And you would assume that if you're taking 2,500 milligrams, it's going to be way worse than 25 milligrams. 25 milligrams is already something you could get in your diet. And the researcher was almost saying, like, you know, be careful about even dietary stuff, right? Or because they add niacin to food as well. So he was questioning whether we should add niacin to food. But we don't know the exact dosage of by which this causes big problems, right? And is this dose dependent, for example? I don't know. If it's dose dependent, then 2,500 milligrams is going to be way worse than 25 milligrams. And it's probably the case, like most other things, that it is dose dependent. And so when we want to look at, is niacin going to kill you? Is it going to cause heart disease? What is the big picture of niacin, right? And we could go through the details of the pros and cons, which we will, but we want to look at the big picture and ask, okay, when people are taking 2,500 milligrams a day, which is a huge amount, and there's a lot of side effects to it, there's many, many more negatives. So when you're taking 25 milligrams a day, I don't notice any negatives of niacin, right, in my blood. If I take 2,000 milligrams a day, which I've done, I notice a lot of things going wrong, and I notice I don't feel as good. There's, you know, there's not only diminishing returns, but there's also negatives as you go higher. So I have noticed negative effects over 500 milligrams. Could be, you know, maybe there's some at 400 milligrams, but definitely I noticed negative effects of over 500 milligrams. And I don't notice, I only notice positive effects at 50, 100, 200, 300. So the question is exactly what dosage is niacin going to be problematic? And so when we look at this 2,500 milligrams, we see that there is no increase in all-cause mortality, zero. That means that actually, like, they were looking to see if it decreases all-cause mortality or the likelihood of dying from any cause, that includes cancer, cardiovascular disease, just everything. If you're taking huge dosages of niacin over a long period of time, are you more or less likely to die? The answer is none, right? You're just the same. It basically just balances out all the negatives and positives. Now, I looked at that study when I was really getting into niacin, and there's multiple meta-analyses like that, by the way. And I was thinking this seems a little weird because of all the benefits of niacin. So what was clear to me is that I didn't fully understand all the negatives of niacin. And over time, I've understood more and more negatives. And this is a new negative that has come to light. And so what we could see is that, okay, if you're taking very high dosages of niacin, 2,500 milligrams, that's, you know, it's 100 times more than 25 milligrams. Then we see that not only are you not increased risk for heart disease, but there's no difference. And actually, one meta-analysis found a decreased risk when people were not taking statins. So that's kind of, you want to look at the big picture. Now, so there's no reason to freak out at whatever dosage of niacin you're taking. The question then becomes, you know, okay, but you're not helping yourself either because there's going to be other negatives. You might be doing some positives, but there's other negatives. And there's better ways to have some of the benefits. Now, the approach that I've taken with niacin is I take about 300 milligrams a day. And I'm playing around. I'm always playing around, whether it's, you know, 100, 200, 300, 400. I'm still not sure exactly where I'm going to land on the subject. But right now, I could say I'm taking 300 milligrams. I always go up and down, and I try to do lab testing. But this is a long-term experiment. This is not something I'm going to figure out over one day or anything like that. So this is something that I might come back in a year and say, I'm going to take 100 milligrams of niacin a day. I feel like 100 milligrams has been a huge game changer, and I'm probably not going to go below 100 milligrams. So really the question is, do I take 200, 300, 400? That I still don't know. Right now I'm at 300. I might go down to 200, right? It's very up in the air right now. So let me go through the thinking of why at this level. So what I was looking at is, okay, if I'm taking a huge dosage, 2,500 milligrams, I'm not going to increase my risk of death, but I'm not going to decrease it either. So I'm not really accomplishing very much. At the very least, I'd want to make sure that this is helping my health span, because it's not really helping my lifespan very much. But, you know, let's go through, there's like 100 different reasons that I'm taking niacin, and I find that it's very good for my immunity, good for cognitive function, good for mood, good for energy levels, good for mitochondria. So it's very, very good for all these things, but there's diminishing returns. So after 100 milligrams a day, you start getting these diminishing returns. And then the question is, and you start getting other negatives. So I want to go through some of the positives and negatives of niacin so that you understand the full equation. The most commonly known positive is it decreases LDL cholesterol. It increases HDL cholesterol. And it decreases lipoprotein A. There's not a lot of good methods to decrease lipoprotein A. So what one could argue is that niacin could make sense because these studies weren't looking at people with lipoprotein A. And we do see in studies that even with PCSK9 inhibitors, which decrease lipoprotein A, they're more effective when they decrease cholesterol, LDL cholesterol. They also decrease lipoprotein A. The effect on mortality is much more significant than those with people without high lipoprotein A. So we see that they never segmented people based on lipoprotein A when they studied niacin, which I think could have been very eye-opening. For example, it could be that if you're in the 20% of the population with high lipoprotein A, you're going to have lower all-cause mortality with niacin. So, and by the way, most of these studies were also done when people were also using statins. So there's diminishing returns when you're taking a statin and also you're taking niacin because your LDL is already pretty low. And going from 80 to 60 in LDL is not going to make a big difference, and it could actually be worse in some ways, right? So there's diminishing returns with decreasing LDL as well. So there's the LDL story, there's the HDL story, and there's the lipoprotein A. And so if you're thinking of taking niacin, does niacin help you increase HDL? Does it decrease LDL? Do you have high lipoprotein A? And let's go through some of the other things that niacin does. Again, not all these things you could look at in the blood, but certain things in the blood you can look at. For example, serum phosphorus. That was one of the things that caused me to decide to take niacin, because 100 milligrams of niacin basically brings down phosphorus pretty dramatically. And this is nicotinic acid, but also the niacinamide does it as well, but I take the nicotinic acid. And so when I took this, the nicotinic acid, my phosphorus went down by 30 to 40%, which also causes cardiovascular disease. So now we're thinking about a much more complex picture. Do you have high serum phosphorus? Do you have high LDL? Do you have high lipoprotein A? Do you have low HDL? Another factor, another blood test that you want to look at is serum tryptophan, so which I also had low levels of. So if you have low levels of serotryptophan, that could indicate a niacin deficiency, because when you're deficient in niacin, you use up tryptophan to create niacin. So that's another factor. Also serum B3, which is niacin. If you're low on serum B3, that's another reason to take niacin. And again, we're talking about me, who you get niacin mainly from meat, and I was consuming a lot of meat, eating very similar to a carnivore-based diet, and I still had low niacin, still had low tryptophan, which also carnivore-based diet has tryptophan. And so I also did this mitochondrial test that I don't necessarily recommend to other people, but it found that my mitochondria weren't working as well, and one of the top recommendations was niacin there. So when I looked at all of those factors, and I also had a high LDL, my HDL was good, but high LDL, high lipoprotein A. When I looked at all these factors, I said, okay, looks like I need niacin. And so I was doing a bunch of experiments. I tried different doses of niacin. And what I found was very, very significant effects on energy, mood, just a whole bunch of areas, immunity. Yeah, just the food sensitivities, actually. And a bunch of lab tests got better. Now, as I went to a certain dosage over 500 milligrams, I started to notice negatives, including worse glucose sensitivity. So I started to have higher fasting glucose. My thyroid hormones were getting a little lower, which there was a research study that found that to be the case. And also my homocysteine was going up a little. Now let's go through some of the negatives of taking niacin. And there's quite a few negatives as well, and I'll go through some of them. One is blood sugar control. So it does cause some degree of insulin resistance. And again, this is a dose-dependent thing. So if you're taking 100 milligrams, it's fine. 200 milligrams, it's fine. The question is, at what point after that does it become, do you start getting more insulin resistant? But basically, I found that my HbA1c started to go up. My fasting blood glucose went up. My homocysteine went up. And it also alleged, like, there's some studies that show that it increases lipoprotein LPPLA2. Not lipoprotein A, but LPPLA2. So if you're an undermethylator already, which I am, genetically speaking, there's, you know, my genetics show I'm an undermethylator, and it also seems to be the case based on my lab test. Adding niacin, which can suck up methyl groups, can be harmful in that way. But what I did is, okay, I basically said, okay, I'm going to reduce the dosage of niacin. And so I started to take about 500 milligrams. I started to, and that basically fixed most of the issues that niacin caused. Now, even when I was taking 300-400 milligrams niacin, my homocysteine got into the optimal range, my LPPLA2, and my HbA1c, and all the metrics that niacin can worsen got in the optimal range. Now, my fasting glucose got better, but it didn't get perfect, but that was from other reasons. That was actually because I was lacking chromium, but that's for another time. One test that I found was, and I found somebody else this happened to, so I don't think this is an accident, is it increased my rate of aging. So according to the Dunedin PACE rate of aging test, my number was 0.72. And then when I lowered the dosage of niacin to about 400 milligrams, it was 0.63. So at 0.72, that means for every year, I'm aging 0.72 years. And it was 0.72 when I was taking about 1,200 milligrams a day. And then when I cut it down by a third to 400 milligrams a day, it was 0.63. So what we see, number one, is when I'm taking 400 milligrams a day, the rate of aging wasn't extremely high or anything. Like, it was actually one of the lowest ever tested, lower than Brian Johnson. And so it's an amazing score, and I was still taking 400 milligrams a day. There's somebody called Dr. Michael Lustig, and he said that when he was taking 600 milligrams of niacin in a day, his rate of aging went up. So the question is, exactly what dosage is your rate of aging going to go up? But it essentially, it does seem like if you take a high dosage of niacin, it could increase your rate of aging, according to the Dunedin PACE test, which is interesting. That's like an area under the curve test. So that's one interesting data point of a negative. But again, I got 0.63, which is extremely low, right? With 400 milligrams a day. So that's something important to know. Now, homocysteine, there's studies showing that very high dose niacin can increase homocysteine by 55%. And I was actually counteracting this the whole time. So I was taking TMG and a bunch of methyl groups, which seemed to blunt any kind of serious impacts on the niacin. Although I do think that it probably increased my homocysteine, it was something that I was trying to improve. Yet, I was able to get the optimal homocysteine value of less than 9 when I was taking 400 milligrams of niacin. So even though I'm an undermethylator and I'm very prone to having high homocysteine, I still was able to get it into the optimal range with 400 milligrams of niacin a day. The next thing is something I didn't really experience, but in studies, it shows that niacin increases LPPLA2, which is a marker of cardiovascular disease. It's something that can cause cardiovascular disease. And again, this is a separate from the 2PY, 4PY situation, but essentially it shows, there's studies that show that it increases LPPLA2. But my level was in the optimal range, even at 400 milligrams a day. So, and by the way, flax oil decreased it tremendously. But essentially, it just, the benefit of flax oil, just even if it had some effect of 400 milligrams, it was clearly outweighed by other things. HbA1c, when I was taking 1,250 milligrams a day, it increased to 5.7. And then it went back to 5.3 as I was taking about 400 milligrams a day. Again, I'm at 300 milligrams now, but I'm talking about when I was at 400 milligrams a day. fasting glucose, it was elevated, a little elevated, not elevated, but it wasn't in the optimal range. It was in the normal range, not the optimal range. And that has to do with other factors that I've since fixed, meaning it was the same before niacin as after niacin. It went up when I was doing 1,250 milligrams of niacin a day, but it has since come down to the baseline, and now it's actually in the optimal range. Thyroid hormone. So my thyroid hormones did decrease when taking higher doses of niacin, but they have since normalized at the 400 milligrams a day level. Now, this is not, I don't know this to be the case, but when I was taking high dose niacin, I felt that I started to get more injuries when exercising. And I think the reason, and by the way, that fixed itself when I was taking more sulfate or sulfur. So I was taking MSM, which had more methyl, more sulfur. But it was mainly the sulfur that fixed that. And I think that niacin can increase detox in the body, and it needs the sulfur basically in order to do that. So basically it uses up more sulfur groups if you take more niacin. This is a theory. This is not something that I can prove. But what I did see is that my cysteine and methionine levels were lower when I was taking higher dose niacin. And now, I haven't tried it on lower dose niacin. I haven't taken the test on lower dose niacin per se, but what I've done is increased my sulfur groups, and those have shot up tremendously, the sulfur amino acids. And so, again, it's a theory that the niacin can take sulfur, which can cause a lot of different issues in the body. And it's not easy to get sulfur through diet, meaning like you could get it from garlic, you could get it from cruciferous vegetables and and onions, but there's only a certain amount of that stuff that you can eat a day, and then you get it from meat. But I was basically maxing out on how much sulfur I could get from the diet, and I was still extremely deficient in sulfur. So I think one of the things that niacin does is it depletes sulfur groups. Next is just a symptom. I had a lot more gas and bloating when I was taking very high dosages of niacin. So I think, yeah, that's not necessarily anything that's related to all-cause mortality, but it is a side effect. But what I'm saying is that at 400 milligrams a day, all those effects went away more or less. Maybe there were some effect, but it wasn't so significant that I could really tell given the blood test. Now I'm at 300 milligrams. Maybe I'll go to 200, right? I don't know yet. But the idea is that at 300, I feel very good from niacin and I don't get any of the side effects. And again, as long as you're taking the other things, now I think the higher you go on niacin, the more you need to do things to counteract some of the side effects. And I think now I have learned how to do that. And I think that the 300 milligrams is very good for me. Now, maybe if somebody's not counteracting any of those side effects from niacin, maybe I would recommend not more than 100 milligrams. But these researchers were saying 25 milligrams is going to kill you essentially. And I think that is completely garbage, because the people who were taking 2,500 milligrams a day, they weren't taking MSM or any of these other supplements that I'm talking about, TMG to increase methyl groups. They weren't on taking things to lower their blood glucose. So I think if you're not doing anything, 2,500 milligrams, I could see why these people didn't live longer, right? It's very rough on the body taking 2,500 milligrams a day. I also think when you take the niacin is important. So if you're taking 2,500 milligrams, that means you're also taking it at night. And I don't think it's a good idea to take it at night because it's stimulating the mitochondria. Now, again, you want to stimulate the mitochondria, but if you stimulate it too much and stimulate it all day, that could also be a problem, right? And there could be other problems that arise from that. So I think that given this new data point that we have for 2PY and 4PY, I think it's interesting. And what I'd like to do is measure that in the blood, but not only measure that, really measure the VCAM1 if possible. I don't think that's something that we can measure, but the idea is that just seeing that something increases a mechanism and this mechanism is related to heart disease doesn't mean that this thing is overall bad. right? It's very clear that overall, even if you don't do anything and you take 2,500 milligrams a day, it's just neutral, more or less, for all-cause mortality. So the idea is that we want to get the benefits, the maximum benefits from niacin, and let's say that's at 100 milligrams, 200 milligrams a day, which also has the lowest side effects, right? And again, we don't know exactly what that dosage is at the lowest side effects, but that this is the goal. And maybe if you're advanced like me, you can go a little higher and then also do a bunch of things to counteract some of those negative effects so that you kind of get the benefits of both worlds. That's my approach. And this approach is something that, you know, it's really thinking about things in a multidimensional way rather than, okay, this thing does this, this is bad for cardiovascular disease, therefore niacin is going to kill you. Like, people are just freaking out about niacin. Hey, what do you think of this, Joe? Because they see me talking about niacin. And I'm just like, yeah, I'll do a podcast on it, basically, because you need to explain all these things. I can't just, you know, explain it in 2 seconds. So the conclusion is that for me, I'm taking 300 milligrams a day now, and I'm playing around with it, seeing if I take less, if I take more, what happens. I'm going less. So I think 100 milligrams is perfectly healthy and good for most people. For me, I'm trying to take 300 and see if I could counteract all the negative effects, which so far I am. And I think for most people, they don't need to worry about freaking out about it. If you're taking 100 milligrams, it's perfectly good. There's many benefits. Maybe there's some negatives, but that's how the world works. You got to look at things in a multidimensional way, not just in one way. And I recommend taking it in the morning, not at night, taking it with a meal, with a high protein meal, because that will take the phosphorus and then increase NAD with that phosphorus. Okay, hope you like this. 67% of listeners aren't following the show, so please don't forget to show your support by hitting the follow button now. You'll not only be supporting the show, but also investing in yourself and your health journey, all while helping to keep us ad-free.